Hi and welcome to the third episode of our special podcast series focused on medicinal herbs and their unique place in the holistic approach to health. Today, host and nutritionist Sarah LeBrun-Bloschka was joined by a new guest, naturopathic clinician Angela Highwood. Today, we're talking about sleep and stress, two aspects of life that are inevitably intertwined with our daily health, for better or for worse.
I'm so excited to have you here today, Angela, and, you know, to have this conversation about, first of all, herbs in regards to stress and anxiety, because this is a very anxious time in life, I think, for many people. And so maybe as we get started, can you just give me a little bit of your background and how you've utilized herbal medicine as a cornerstone of your practice?
Absolutely. And thanks for having me on today. I'm really excited to share some of my passion and talk herbs. I could talk herbs all day, every day. So I am an Australian trained naturopathic clinician, and I've been in practice for 25 years here in Australia, 4 years of which I actually lived and worked in the United States. So the US is really close to my heart. I started out my journey actually in the world of pharmaceutical medicine, and I come from three generations of pharmacists. So my first herbal experience was actually in my grandfather's dispensary in his community pharmacy in Perth in Western Australia, where I found a bag of chamomile flowers. And I remember asking my grandfather what they were for, and he said to me, "Oh, we make them into a tea for people who can't sleep." So that was when I was a child, and people often say, "Well, that's weird, that was a pharmacy." Well, guess what? Before there were pharmaceutical medicines, there were herbs. So that started out actually my passion and interest for plant medicine. And then I studied pharmacy and then went on to do my naturopathic studies, and then knew that I needed to know more. So then started to actually work with Associate Professor Kerry Bone as my mentor and teacher, and worked for MediHerb, and then my learning just fast-tracked on this incredible level. So herbal medicine is one of the modalities that I use in my practice. My dispensary has over 200 botanical medicines here that we use in tea form, and of course in tincture form and in tablet form. But I also combine it with clinical nutrition and nutritional supplement prescribing. And I also do some other modalities like homeopathy as well. But herbal medicine is the cornerstone for me. And the reason that I love it so much is it's a wonderful place where science meets tradition. There's an extraordinary amount of evidence basis to botanical medicine, and that's being, uncovered more and more so. And herbs, I have always felt, have been like functional foods, powerful functional foods to the human body. They are gentle yet exquisitely powerful in their ability to bring about homeostasis or balance and repair and normalization of our body again. They're endlessly wonderful in their clinical application and their science. And I don't think I'll ever lose my passion for botanicals. They're incredible.
They are incredible, right? The power in what nature can grow. I think what you said, science meets tradition, is such a strong, powerful idea in regards to herbs, because really it is. It's like this, since, the millennium, right, that people have been utilizing herbs as medicine, and really we're keeping up now with the science to learn more from that. So I think, that's a really powerful statement. So if we think a little bit more about stress, and many of us are stressed, because of the world around us or our children, or we're homeschooling our children and doing our jobs and, you know, all those things. What would be the top kind of five herbs that you think about in regards to helping somebody with, you know, taking that stress and making sure that it doesn't overwhelm them?
Absolutely. Gosh, these herbs I've been using for the exhausted and the, you know, stressed individual for decades now. There's a different subset of herbs I will use for exhaustion, which, you know, we'll talk about a little bit later. But the stressed constitution, and let's just talk about what stress is from an endocrine point of view. Stress is an overdrive of cortisol. And there is no pharmaceutical drug that actually can normalize, balance, or regulate cortisol. And this is why herbal medicine, I feel, is just so imperative at, you know, at this stage of the world that we're at. And we're spoilt for choice, actually. Mother Nature grows on this beautiful planet so many different plants to calm down an overstressed and strung out nervous system. So here are some of my favorites. There's a beautiful gentle herb called lemon balm. A lot of people have, you know, perhaps even taken this as a herbal tea in a, you know, a little stress branded tea. But lemon balm is a traditional Western botanical, lots of good evidence for calming the nervous system. It contains some essential oils, but some other phytoconstituents. So I tend to use it in either a tablet form or a liquid extract, mostly for my patients. And what I love about lemon balm is that it's safe from a newborn through to someone who is, you know, 99 years old or 100 years old. It's safe for any age and stage of life. It has quite an immediate effect, and it just promotes this beautiful feeling of calm and, you know, without sedation. And I think this is an interesting point here because, you know, so many pharmaceutical drugs that might be given for treatment of anxiety are just sedatives. And certainly don't make people feel sort of just balanced and good. They literally sedate them. But herbs aren't like that. They don't work in that way. So lemon balm has this beautiful, you know, very, very subtle and gentle but profound way of just promoting you to feel back in your own skin, back on planet Earth and relaxed. Another favorite of mine is the beautiful passion flower. So I just can't help but get such a strong visual image of this magnificent plant, the beautiful flower of the passion fruit vine. Now, it's actually not the flower that's used medicinally. It's actually sort of the whole plant. But this is our traditional passion fruit vine. Passion flower is fast acting as a calming herb. And there's actually research to show that even a 5 milliliter dose of a liquid extract of passion flower is as effective as an anti-anxiety drug that they give to patients pre-operatively, believe it or not. So passion flower is my kind of the strongest go-to herb if someone needs to calm down right now and get out of that state of anxiousness and back into a calm space. So I actually use a lot of passion flower in my practice. It's a really beautiful herb. Again, it's safe. It's got no drug interactions or no side effects other than just promoting this feeling of calm. And it can be used from children right through to the very elderly. It's an exquisite plant. Another of my favorite herbs for a stressed nervous system is an adrenal adaptogen called ashwagandha, or its botanical name is Withania somnifera. Ashwagandha is a traditional Ayurvedic herb, so coming from the traditional Indian medicine system. And ashwagandha has this capacity to heal and calm the adrenals and regulate the stress hormone cortisol and ensure that we don't tip over to an excess cortisol production. At the same time, ashwagandha is known to have a calming effect on the nervous system. So I love this herb for patients who are like that real presentation of stressed and wired. You know, they're really, really wired. They're really, really stressed. But underneath that, they're actually exhausted. withania also has really fantastic research and impact on boosting the immune system. Anytime we are stressed and we're running on that hormone cortisol, cortisol has an immunosuppressive effect. So stress, as we often will see, will lead to immune compromise. And ashwagandha as a herb is one of those that gives you that calming effect, but also immunological enhancement at the same time. And from a traditional Ayurvedic medicine point of view, ashwagandha is a herb that's been used for children a lot, and for children's nourishment overall. So obviously for their little adrenals and their nervous system. So I love it, and I really want you to remember, and those of you who are listening, to remember ashwagandha is for those who are, wired and stressed, and you just need to calm their adrenals and calm their nervous system. Gosh, I could talk all day about these herbs. Another favourite of mine that I'd be remiss not to discuss is chamomile. I think we, every one of us as human beings, we've heard of chamomile, we've probably drunk chamomile tea. It's a part of traditional Western medicine and traditional American herbal medicine as well. And it's humble and simple and beautiful. Even if you grow fresh chamomile flowers in your garden, you can harvest them and steep them in some hot water and make a divine tea, which will have a calming effect on the nervous system. So this is a simple herb that can be, steeped for 15 or 20 minutes in some boiling water and made as a delicious tea, whether the chamomile's fresh or whether it's dried. Chamomile is like, I call it the herb that's like the hug of a mother. It's nurturing, it's calming, it's gentle, it's soft and incredible for unwinding a really stressed nervous system. I love this plant. And then I wanted a journey to a different part of the world, to the Polynesian Islands, and talk about their traditional herb for stress, and that is kava. Kava is a herb that I use extensively in my practice. It's got probably one of the highest levels of research and evidence around anxiety from medical clinical studies, and it is just remarkable. So in Polynesia and the Polynesian Islands, when the chiefs of tribes would come together to have discussion and resolve problems between the tribes, they would start by having a kava ceremony where they would drink kava to welcome each other and welcome in the meeting. And it has a very profound calming and anti-anxiety effect on the nervous system. So I always laugh and say maybe the chiefs of these warrior people were drinking kava so they wouldn't kill each other. So they'd calm down and be able to, discuss, their disputes with ease and without stress and anxiety. So that's the tradition of kava, but science has come a long way with it, and we know that it's a very powerful anti-stress herb, one of my absolute favourites in clinical practice. So there's just a snapshot of my top five herbs for the stressed nervous system.
I love your passion around them, and kava is one of my favorites. Whenever I travel, which hasn't happened so much lately, but it's, I find that if I take it to help me kind of calm down before I go to sleep, it's just an amazing effect. And I loved your story about chamomile. Chamomile is something that my son was very into growing teas for a while, and he was growing chamomile, and it smells, and I love the idea of it as a mother's hug. It's such a lovely imagery.
Oh, it's a beautiful plant. It really is. And not a day goes by in my clinical practice where I don't add chamomile to a tonic, or I have a herbal tea library here at my office where I prepare custom medicinal teas for people. So I'll often do a sleep tea and add chamomile, or a children's tea and add chamomile to it. It's a herb that I just couldn't live without. It's so beautiful.
great transition right there was we talk about children. You know, you mentioned some of the herbs that you just talked about and their use in children. Can we talk just a little bit about herbs to kind of help children calm down? And then what is the dosing and safety for children?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that a lot of practitioners do get a bit worried about herbs and children, where I would really like to take this opportunity to remind everyone that botanical medicine is the safest first-line choice for kids. It really is. Herbs are, they're gentle, they're subtle, they're safe. You can use them as teas. You can crush tablets and, you know, dissolve tablets and give them that way. You can give liquid extracts of botanicals to children. And my preference is to use liquid extracts because you can calibrate the dose so easily from a single, like one drop, you know, for a newborn up to milliliter dosages for older children. So the flexibility of liquid herbal dosing for children is an incredible blessing for clinical practice. So there are sets of herbs that I do like to put aside for children that have a good lot of traditional evidence for children's botanical medicine. And one of the sort of textbooks that I rely on was written by a German doctor who was a specialist in botanical pediatrics. You've also got an incredible herbalist in the United States, Dr. Mary Bove, who's a naturopathic clinician and herbal specialist, and she's one of my gurus of pediatric herbal medicine as well. So Mary's got a couple of wonderful books that she's published as well. So there's a couple of references in terms of texts. But for kids, as I said, let's talk dosage first. So dosage, as I said, with liquid herbs is very easy to manage for children because you can start as simple as a couple of drops and then move up to, you know, maybe 1 milliliter, which is about 20 drops, or even 2 milliliters, which is 40 drops, to then see the best impact of the herb for the child. For an infant, say a newborn child in their first 6 months of life, if their, you know, nervous systems are stressed, you know, due to teething, or if they're getting some colic, or, you know, those typical infantile problems that we would see, you literally cannot go past giving that child a little dose of chamomile. Chamomile is the number one remedy for colic and teething in children. It's been used in German botanical medicine and pediatrics forever. So, you know, when kids start to present with those problems, literally you just start with 1 or 2 drops and you can give it as frequently as needs be, you know, after every feed for colic. And it still remains to be the most effective treatment that I've ever come across in clinical practice for a colicky baby. It's incredible. Even if they're breastfed, just 1 little drop in a teaspoon of mum's breast milk after a feed is incredibly powerful to calm that little tummy and relieve the pain and spasms of colic. Again, for anxious children or children that are feeling the impacts of stress, and there's children are so acutely aware of the stress of their parents. Now, they might not be able to verbalize it because they don't have that cognitive capacity as yet, but we see it in sleep problems, we see it in mood changes, we see it in appetite, we see it in tantrums. Children are like a barometer for how their parents are coping. So, you know, it's our responsibility as parents to look after ourselves and make sure that we're doing okay and factoring in, you know, everything from mental, physical, emotional, spiritual, nutritional to keep ourselves well-grounded, happy and calm as well for the sake of our children. But if our kids need a bit of support, my number one herb for a stressed child is chamomile, followed by the beautiful herbs lemon balm, and passion flower. And then the number one adrenal adaptogen that I would give to a stressed child time and time and time again based on the Ayurvedic tradition is ashwagandha. So those herbs are herbs that I will often put together in a little tonic for children and have parents give, you know, at least morning and evening to just promote a beautiful, calm, relaxed nervous system for a little child. They're a beautiful combination and so incredibly clinically effective. We have a bottle of that combination of herbs at home, and both of my children, you know that every morning and every night they take a little dose of those herbs to set them on their day in a happy and calm way and also promote a good quality sleep as well.
So a lot of times we find that it might be difficult to get children to take anything, and herbs are part of that. How have you worked with parents and yourself to get your children to easily take the herbs? And, you know, what are some of those opportunities that you've seen that really can make it easier for a parent to make sure the child adheres to the practitioner's recommendations?
Absolutely. And compliance is always, always a conversation that we have. So my number one recommendation is the sooner you can introduce herbs as a form of medicine to children, the better. So my children, who are 5 and 7, they've been taking herbs literally since they could open their mouth as newborns. So, you know, obviously for them, the taste of herbs is nothing new. Their body is completely used to it. And of course, I've had the knowledge and the privilege of all my knowledge to be able to do that from when they were newborns. So that's why I don't need to put liquid herbs into anything to hide flavour or disguise them for my kids, because they're just used to them. But that's not the case for 99% of the rest of the rest of families out there. So here's what I recommend. Usually when I see a child in my practice, their mum or their dad are already patients of mine that I look after. So I'll say, well, the best way to have a positive role modelling impact on your child is we need to get mum and dad to take some herbs too, so that they take them as a family together in the morning and in the evening. So role modelling is a really good way there, and that's often very successful. Secondly, what we can do is gradually introduce the flavour of herbs to children. So just starting with one simple single liquid herb like chamomile is a really good starting point. Let the little taste buds and the body get used to that, and then you can add layers of herbs from there and introduce maybe the ones that don't taste so good a bit later when their body's used to them. So start gently, maybe just one herb at a time. The beautiful thing with children is you're often only using very small doses. So, you know, 1 milliliter of chamomile for a child up to the age of 5 or 6 is actually sufficient as a clinical dose, you know, morning and night. So that's 20 drops. If you got some good quality organic cranberry juice and put 20 drops of chamomile in there, I can guarantee you the potency of the flavour of cranberry will completely mask the chamomile. So popping it into a little bit of a high quality, low sugar juice is another recommendation. I will also often combine the children's herbs with a little bit of like glycerin or apple juice concentrate or pear juice concentrate. Again, these are organic and concentrate, so they just mask the flavor of the herbs to a certain degree. I don't, however, recommend that we ever add herbs to food or to smoothies or things like that, because if children start to get suspicious that we're adding, you know, funny things into their food, they may stop then being willing to eat. So I keep food and I keep medicine completely separate in my clinical practice. There is an exception to that, and if they're like a little baby who are starting some solids and don't really know the difference between what tastes good and what doesn't, quite frankly, because their nervous systems and taste buds are still learning and exploring, then you could use a little dose of herbs into like some applesauce for a child as well. So there's some tricks of the trade. Start slowly and gently, start one herb at a time, start low dose with just a drop dose of medicine. You can also, for older children, crush tablets up. I will always say if I've got to give a child a treatment protocol and they're maybe like, you know, 6 to sort of 10 years old, I will have the parents put the herbal tablets in a coffee bean grinder, grind them down to a powder, and then you could mix them into something like, you know, some coconut yogurt or some applesauce for the children to take. And the powdered version of tableted herbs won't have very much taste at all, so it's pretty easy to get those down. The other thing that parents tend to forget is that by the time a child's usually like 6 or 7, you can actually teach them to swallow tablets and capsules. And this is something that I've just gone through with my little boy, who's just about to turn 7. And I guess this comes from my pharmacy background of being able to coach, you know, adults and children to take tablets and capsules. So we just went through the exercise of teaching him that process. And now he actually takes most of his supplements, nutritional and botanical, in tablet forms and easily swallows them. So just a quick tip, if you're teaching a child to swallow a tablet, then put water in the mouth first, slip the tablet into the mouth, and because tablets are heavy, you want to look up to the ceiling so the tablet floats to the back of the soft palate, and then swallow it down with that mouth full of water. However, with a capsule, capsules are light and they float on water. So once again, put a mouthful of water in the mouth, slip the capsule through the lips into the mouth, and then look down at the toes. And then when you look down, the capsule floats to the back of the soft palate and then can be swallowed down. So that coaching can often take about half an hour, but you know, my son is not even 7 yet and can swallow tablets and capsules. So that's another tip there for you too.
Those are great information. And I think the fact that you talked about with your children, starting them early and helping them understand that, you know, those tastes are normal. I mean, we've lost a lot of our ability to appreciate bitter taste. And if we start them early, that also is beneficial to a lot of foods too, that have those, you know, great bitter compounds. So, and I love all those tips and trades that you talked about and how you can get your child to consume them. As we continue to think about, you know, some of those different aspects of not just children, but adults, where there's different types, you know, we talked about wired and tired earlier. You know, what is the difference really between that exhaustion versus stress versus anxiety? And how do you kind of parse out those scenarios so that you can appropriately treat or support that patient with herbs as you go through those, you know, kind of 3 different scenarios of exhaustion, more acute stress, and then anxiety?
Absolutely. So let's break it down from more of a biomedical endocrinology point of view. Stress is what I would typically call phase 2 adrenal stress, where the patient's adrenals are pumping out cortisol, and cortisol overactivates the sympathetic branch of the autonomic nervous system. So the patient's actually living in sympathetic overdrive, fight and flight. That is actually what stress is all about. And, you know, a patient's body, all of our bodies have got to have a lot of nutritional reserve to be able to continue to pump out that cortisol, continue to be in fight and flight mode. And that actually changes your whole brain architecture as well. You're actually living in your amygdala, which is a center of reactivity, a center of fear. The amygdala then continues to communicate with the adrenals to continue that cortisol, you know, being pumped out. So that's actually, from a physiological and an endocrinological point of view, what stress is. So we must take into consideration the adrenals, and the number one herb here to try and break that pattern and stop the adrenals producing, you know, all of this cortisol is the herb ashwagandha. This is why ashwagandha is probably one of my top 5 liquid herbs and tableted herbs used in my clinical practice, because we all know that stress is a reality of today's life. Now, at the same time, when we know we're living in sympathetic dominance, that fight and flight, this is incredibly exhausting to the reserves in our body on the nervous system. You know, we need a heap of magnesium and calcium and B vitamins to continue to produce the neurotransmitters required to run the body at that pace. And this is where it goes very quickly from stress to smashing down to exhaustion. It's simply when the body runs out of the minerals, the essential fats, the amino acids to continue to produce the neurotransmitters to live in fight and flight. So let me back up a little bit and talk about my favorite combination of herbs to support us getting back out of fight and flight and back into healthy autonomic nervous system balance. So this is ashwagandha as the core adrenal adaptogen. And I always like to back that up with some adrenal tender loving care and a beautiful adrenal tonic. And one of my favorites in this scenario is Romania. Romania is, it's like functional food, nourishes and feeds and restores and repairs the adrenal cortex and the adrenal medulla. We've also got to get back into the nervous system and calm the autonomic nervous system to help promote, you know, getting out of sympathetic dominance back into the calm, relaxed, healthy living state, which is parasympathetic dominance, okay? Which is should be our everyday. Parasympathetic dominance is our rest and digest and reproduce and relax mode. Okay, that's where we need to be living a majority of the time. So the herbs that help us do that are the herbs like valerian, passion flower, chamomile, and kava is a great example there as well. So that's an example of the subset of herbs factoring in looking at the adrenal element, but also looking at the nervous system element. Now, as I mentioned, you can only live so long in fight and flight. You know, we're not designed as mammals or simple, humble animals to be living in that alarm mode all the time. But unfortunately, we know people do. So quite quickly, we run out of all the nutritional building blocks to produce healthy neurotransmitters. And this is why it affects our mental health so adversely and affects our energy so adversely. And we fast go down the slippery slope of nervous exhaustion. And nervous exhaustion is literally when the adrenals just don't have the fuel, the energy or the reserves to produce, you know, enough cortisol anymore. So from an adrenal stress pattern, this is where you slump into low cortisol, low DHEA, and you've run out of the building blocks to make neurotransmitters to make us feel good and function well. So from an adrenal point of view, this is called phase 3 adrenal exhaustion. And the herbs that I really love in this scenario as an adrenal tonic, I really love the use of licorice. Licorice, once again, restores, repairs, and is like functional food to the adrenal cortex and the adrenal medulla. And we also know that licorice has this cortisol-sparing effect. So any skerrick of cortisol that the adrenals are able to produce actually will last longer and have more duration in the body's system with that little bit of support from licorice. So licorice is perfectly appropriate for that adrenal and nervous system exhaustion picture. I always back licorice up with adaptogens as well. Adaptogens and adrenal tonics are like the left hand and the right hand for, you know, rebuilding and repair. And a perfect adrenal adaptogen for this nervous and adrenal exhaustion. My two favorites are rhodiola and Korean ginseng. And another favorite of mine here is the Siberian ginseng herb as well. These are gentle restoratives. They promote some energy without exhausting the system further. From a Chinese medicine point of view, when someone is in this nervous system exhaustion, they tend to have a more cold constitution. So Korean ginseng is just like putting a little bit of kindling on the fire to promote that warmth and that energy and that sustenance of life for repair. I love that herb so much. It's one that is misunderstood a lot, though, I must admit. But it's like kindling on the fire to warm, heal, and repair. Now, from a nervous system herbs point of view, we really want to go in with nutritive herbs for nervous exhaustion. And these are gentle nervous system tonics to nourish, to repair, to, I guess, almost like rewire the nervous system to a certain degree. Good old-fashioned oats is an incredible nervous system tonic. Now, we don't necessarily need to take that as a herb. We can eat them every day for breakfast. And by eating, you know, oats as a porridge or as a part of your breakfast every morning, you're literally feeding your nervous system with a nutritive herb. So that's, you know, herbal slash food as medicine approach. Another one of my absolute favorite herbs for nervous exhaustion is St. John's wort. St. John's wort's classically known as a herb for, you know, depression and low mood. And depression and low mood will certainly come in when you have nervous exhaustion. So my top ones for nervous exhaustion from a nervine point of view is oats, St. John's wort, and the humble little nettle leaf is incredible here as well. Because nettle leaf is like the multi-mineral of the herbal kingdom, and it's a very powerful nutritive herb to nourish an exhausted body. So they're some of my favorites there.
You know, you had mentioned licorice, and I think it's always good to touch on this because, you know, it comes up a lot in common media and elsewhere, and people have some concerns, you know, in regards to licorice and somebody who may be at risk of high blood pressure. Can you just touch on that slightly just to help practitioners to understand, you know, what is the right patient to utilize licorice and maybe who should not utilize licorice?
Yeah, wonderful point to raise because it is a question that I get a lot. So licorice is, from a science point of view, contraindicated for hypertension. Most hypertensive, high blood pressure patients are going to be those that are living in sympathetic dominance, you know, stress and cortisol overdrive, and the cortisol, you know, bumps up their sympathetic nervous system and has a vasoconstrictive effect, so blood pressure goes up. Okay. So that's the patient that we don't want to prescribe licorice for, because licorice has its cortisol sparing effect, so it can basically increase their net level of cortisol in their body. So I always say, look, for those who are in nervous stress, who have a predisposition to high blood pressure, licorice is not necessarily the best choice of herb for them. Instead, I would go for the adrenal tonic repair herb, Romania. Romania has the same action in terms of nourishing and loving and feeding and supporting the beautiful adrenals, but has no contraindication with high blood pressure whatsoever, and is completely safe for that individual who needs adrenal support but has high blood pressure. So Romani is the one that I would go for instead. However, if you've got the patient with low blood pressure, adrenal fatigue, nervous system exhaustion, then licorice is actually the perfect herb for that individual as an adrenal restorative. So that's the application there. Now, we also use licorice in a lot for the respiratory system and coughs and lung problems. So if you wanted to use licorice for, you know, someone who's, for example, highly stressed but has, you know, a lung infection and they've got a terrible cough, and we want to use it to soothe and have this anti-inflammatory lung effect, the short-term use of licorice for up to 2 to 3 weeks will not have a hypertensive effect. So I want everyone to really understand that we can use licorice in that stressed patient if we're using it for the respiratory system for cough, for example, as long as we don't exceed the use of 2 to 3 weeks, okay?
That's really great information, because I know we receive many, you know, comments and questions about that. And so thank you for clearing kind of, you know, the right patient for licorice and how to utilize it. You know, one of the other things that you discussed was adrenal tonics, and you also talked about adaptogens. Can you really define the difference between them? Because a lot of times we hear people getting them confused, and we just want to make sure that people understand the difference appropriately.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have adrenal tonics, and adrenal tonics I best describe as functional food and repair agents for the tissue of the adrenals, the adrenal cortex and the adrenal medulla. So I think functional foods and restoratives is the best way to describe a true adrenal tonic. And a true adrenal tonic we want to prescribe for a patient for really a minimum of 3 months to allow time for restore and repair. Because let's face it, our adrenals never get the chance to turn off, do they? We rely on them every day for human function. And we have two choices of adrenal tonics. We have licorice, or that can be interchanged with the herb Romania. There are no other adrenal tonics that have been traditionally used or researched. They, as I said, Romania, licorice, true functional food for repair and restoration of the tissue of the adrenal cortex and the adrenal medulla. Now, adaptogens, on the other hand, help us as humans adapt the output from the adrenals in accordance to what life demands. So if you are in a scenario where your adrenals are tired, yet we've got a stressful experience, and you're taking an adaptogen, the adaptogens will allow your adrenals to produce sufficient cortisol fast and effective enough to get out of the stress or get out of the way of danger. And then what those adaptogens will do is basically help you come back to normal baseline cortisol levels again without the impact and consequence of, damage on the system. So they are like, I think the best way to describe them would be like a dimmer switch on a light. So they help us turn up our production of hormones when we need them, and adaptogens can also help us turn down the production of hormones after the event of the stressor. So like a dimmer switch on a light. So the adaptogens are an incredibly powerful set of herbs because the research on them done from Russia are unbelievable. I think they're some of the most sophisticated botanicals that we have available to us for human life as we know it in this very strange world that we're living in. There is not a day go by that I would miss taking an adaptogen myself. I consider it, you know, an essential life source for myself, to be honest. So we are spoilt for choice for the number of adaptogens that we have. So let me just list off a few. We have Siberian ginseng, Korean ginseng, ashwagandha, rhodiola, Schisandra. All the medicinal mushrooms really act from an adaptogenic effect as well. So Mother Nature's, you know, way wiser than the whole human population put together. Mother Nature provides us with, you know, an abundance of adaptogenic plants, I think, for human survival.
Yeah. I mean, I agree, you know, especially in today's environment, you taking an adaptogen every day is really a key to making sure that we can get through the day. And, you know, our stresses are different than they were, you know, 500 years ago, but they're still very real, right? And the adaptogenic herbs really can help with stress that was then and is now. So I think that's really key. One of the other kind of end thoughts as we close up today is sleep. We know that stress and sleep can be a vicious cycle. And if we're not getting sleep, we feel more stressed. And if we are stressed, we can't get enough sleep. So what are some of the herbal products that you would consider for insomnia, and also maybe those who can fall asleep but can't stay asleep?
So I'm particularly fascinated with sleep research, I think, because it's been one of the thorns in my side. I've never been a great sleeper, so I'm constantly on the search for research and understanding sleep from a medical point of view. One of my gurus of sleep research is a professor out of UCLA. His name's Dr. Matthew Walker. And he's doing some of the most interesting sleep research that I've come across. He's got an incredible book called Why We Sleep. So for those of you interested in learning more about sleep, get hold of his book. It's incredible. Now, insomnia, we can really define it in two ways. Onset insomnia, which is trouble falling asleep, and maintenance insomnia, trouble staying asleep. So onset insomnia, trouble falling asleep, generally is associated with just having too much cortisol and your nervous system being in that fight, flight, on dominant mode, you know, when you're trying to go to bed. So the very first thing that we have to do is factor in sleep hygiene. So, of course, no technology, don't watch TV, get your mobile phone out of your bedroom. You know, allow your brain at least an hour and a half to 2 hours to wind down at nighttime, which means no tech. I think social media and tech is, to be honest, the devil in disguise when it comes to, you know, people's health and especially nighttime health and sleep health. So it does take, you know, a lot of personal discipline to turn off the technology and put it away and respect our body's needs. Have a hot shower half an hour before bed because heat promotes the release of melatonin. Melatonin simply can't be released from our pineal gland while you've got too much cortisol pumping around the body. So, you know, help the body by not overstimulating the nervous system with excessive light and technology or anything that's too stimulating. An hour before bed is when you can really bring botanicals or herbs in to help try and calm the cortisol and calm the nervous system and set yourself up for success at night. So some of my classic herbs that I really love for helping you get to sleep is valerian, passion flower, Californian poppy, chamomile, and skullcap. They're my absolute favourites in this circumstance. And even good old-fashioned chamomile tea, you know, a couple of tablespoons of dried chamomile flowers in a teapot, boiling water, but let it infuse for 20 minutes in order to make that tea medicinal. So I'll always say, you know, have a pot of chamomile tea and a little bit of protein right before bed, and that will help to promote a good quality sleep. We need a bit of protein before bed to just help, you know, lock the nervous system down for a good quality sleep. Okay, so those herbs, valerian, passion flower, cow poppy, chamomile, skullcap, they will help you get to sleep. Likewise, the herb kava is an absolutely brilliant herb to help promote sleep as well. But I always say take kava during the day to help try and reduce that build-up of stress and tension, and then bring in these sleep herbs just immediately, you know, before bed. So onset insomnia is all about too much cortisol and too much stimulation, and the brain is just on. So we've got to use, you know, lifestyle, you know, making sure all our sleep hygiene practices are put into place. Now, with maintenance insomnia, for those people who can fall asleep really quickly and easily but wake up, you know, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning and can't get back to sleep, this is when cortisol starts to surge in the middle of the night and waking up the brain and then wakes up the nervous system. And then cortisol's got a half-life of around about 40 minutes, so it's every bit of a couple of hours before the patient can then get back to sleep. So essentially what we're dealing with maintenance insomnia is actually a degree of that adrenal stress picture. So one of my favourite herbs is to use ashwagandha through the day, but also a dose of ashwagandha at nighttime, because ashwagandha is one of our best cortisol calming herbs that we have in our dispensary. Likewise, with these individuals, I really love the use of kava during the course of the day to help reduce that build-up of stress and tension in the body. One of the things that I've seen from a clinical observation point of view is the people that tend to wake up through the night and can't get back to sleep are often eating dinner very early and not having enough protein with their dinner. So one of my tricks or tips of the trade is actually to have, again, a protein snack before bed. So if patients are not dairy intolerant, they can simply just have some yogurt before bed or a nice handful of nuts and seeds. You know, will do the job as well. So protein helps the adrenals sort of lock down to be able to rest at nighttime. So there's some of my tricks of the trade there, but maintenance insomnia is all actually about adrenal stress and that cortisol surge.
Well, Angela, thank you so much for sharing all of this knowledge in regards to stress and herbs and ending with sleep, because as we all know, if we don't get good sleep, then it has an effect throughout the day. And we learned from you also taking the herbs, you know, throughout the day can help us with the sleep. So I think those are really important aspects. Any last comments that you want to add, and then we'll finalize our conversation today?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one of the things that I, you know, always say, and I always love to sort of finish talking about herbs on is, you know, remember that herbs are of this earth. They are, I truly believe that they are, you know, put here as an extension of our food kingdom, as gentle, safe, and effective medicine. Our body recognizes herbal medicine like it recognizes food. It's the most natural, holistic way for our body to get medicine, to afford itself some repair in such a gentle way. So I know a lot of people get, you know, anxious and worried about, oh, are herbs safe, or are they this, or are they that? I always say herbs are as safe as food. They are just an extension of the food kingdom put on this beautiful planet for us for medicinal purpose. So go forth and, you know, use them with confidence and know that they are gentle and they are innate medicine for us as human beings. So I hope you enjoy your botanical use and botanical prescribing as much as I do.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me on today. It's been wonderful.
For more on sleep, stress, and the role of lifestyle choices in human health, visit holisticmatters.com. That's holistic with a W. We'll have a variety of time-stamped references and notes from today on the podcast page for this episode. We'll be back again in August, again on the first Friday of the month, with more on herbal medicine. This podcast was brought to you by the Holistic Matters podcast series from holisticmatters.com, powered by Standard Process. The music featured on this episode comes from a song called New Day by Lee Rosevere, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License.